Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Pettum here, as always. And of course, we're here to talk all things Aston Villa Football Club with a 1-0 away win away at Southampton. Of course, I mean, what is that, three wins on the bounce away from home, which hasn't happened since like November 2020 or something like that. Regardless, it's nice to see. If you want to look back to further when we've won more games consistently on the road, it's probably been even longer, more depressing, and we don't really need to go down that road. But anyways, it's not just me today. We do have Mr. Sebastian Bacon as well. So Seb, how's it going for you?
It's always nice to join you on these after a win. It makes our life a lot easier and a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, I'd have to say it's almost kind of weird chatting with just you. I can't remember the last time we've done just a podcast together. It probably hasn't been that long. And for most listeners, of course, you either hear me or Seb's voice during the week. For most of it, you'd have to say, or for all of it as host, I actually have to say, I can't remember anyone else hosting for the life of me. But regardless, we're going to chat through the win away at St. Mary's, kind of look at the table ahead, of course, because we're out of the next round of the Cup. So Villa don't play until February 4th against Leicester. So there'll be a bit of a lull there. And yeah, we'll just kind of go through the game and a few other things, general Villa chatter as per usual, and see how long we can take up people's work days and fill it with more nonsense. Because of course, if you're listening to this, you might be working on a Monday, Tuesday, whatever, whenever you are listening to this and thinking, how can I make my day a little bit better? Well, it's by listening to us, of course. I only say that jokingly because I don't have that much confidence in myself. But anyways, let's get over to some of the match stats. Of course, the most important one being the goal, Ollie Watkins, almost said Wally Hawkins there. Ollie Watkins scoring in the 77th minute thanks to a Dougie Louise beautiful free kick, well-placed, and nice little header into the right-hand side of the goal. Getting down to the match stats in particular, of course, which is a talking point in itself and pleasing to see Villa actually leading in possession very comfortably and winning. 64% possession to Villa, 36 to Southampton, 16 shots, 8 to Southampton. Each side had 5 on target. We had 2 corners to their 2 as well. They had 19 fouls to our 9, which is really nice to see the foul count for Villa going down as well, because it shows we're doing something effective. We have the ball. They're getting frustrated. And of course, that's one of the reasons why we did score. So Seb, just to throw it to you, what were your kind of general thoughts on the game? Because I mean, we all know that since Unai Emery's come in, it's been massively impressive. We're just on an absolute tear as of late. It hasn't been beautiful to watch at times, I'd have to say. Maybe a few more goals would be nice. It hasn't been always the most easy and comforting to watch, but when is it watching Villa, of course. But how did you find this one?
I love the little tangents you go off on. Honestly, I could sit and listen to them all day.
Oh, you sweetheart, you.
Normally it's only Simon that flirts with me, so this will take a bit of getting used to. I've forgotten the question. Villa goal. Yeah. I remember filming the preview in midweek, and you know, Southampton were on a roll. I think we did a live on Twitter as well, and everyone seemed really confident, and I was trying really hard not to bring the mood down by saying that I wasn't as confident and I didn't think it would be as much of a walkover as maybe other people expected. Southampton had won 3 in a row, beating Man City in the cup and also putting 3 points past their relegation rivals Everton. So they were on top of the world. And I said at the time, it's probably the worst time to play Southampton we could have possibly had all season. In typical Villa fashion, we go to bottom of the league when they are absolutely rocking. So I think to get 3 points was absolutely crucial. And you're right, it wasn't pretty. In fact, it was very, very ugly. You know, it was awful. And I think a lot of people thought that we were heading towards a draw. You know, it was about whether we could find that clinical edge and put one past them, because, you know, they were a tough outfit to break down. They were tight, they were compact, they were conceding shots, but it never really looked like we'd score. So for Ollie Watkins to put one in the back of the net and silence some of the critics that he's had recently was very satisfying indeed. But these are the games that we have to win to get to where we aspire to be. You know, there is a lot of talk about Villa's aims and high ambitions, and to do that, these are the games that we have to win. I don't care how we win, I don't care what the scoreline is, but if we win, that is the most important thing. And that's the sort of thing that Unai Emery brings to the club. You know, a manager with such tactical nous and intelligence of in-game scenarios and situations brings that added confidence to the players, and it brings that extra killer edge when you really, really need it. Because we did need it on Saturday. You know, the tide could have definitely turned, and momentum could have certainly gone another way had some big decisions gone against us instead of in our favour. But I think all in all, the 3 points were probably deserved. And it just continues that platform for Unai Emery to build on. We're now 3 games in to our 4-game. I remember sitting here and saying, look, we've got 4 teams now that arguably on paper we should be beating: Wolves, Leeds, Southampton and Leicester, all down the bottom, all scrapping for any points that they can get. And I remember sitting here and then saying, Unai Emery struggles most against low block teams. He struggles to break teams down that will sit on the edge of their box and defend for their lives. So we will learn a lot more about Unai Emery and his capabilities after this 4-game run. And 3 games in, and we're unbeaten in this run. 2 wins and a draw with Leicester, a week's break in between as well. So he just keeps exceeding every single expectation I have of him. And I'm absolutely in love with that man. And may the good times continue with him.
Well, I mean, as Tom has always said, Steven Gerrard's greatest contribution as Villa manager was going to Boubacar Kamara's house and convincing him to join Villa. I stand by that. It's almost comical in a way when you think about, of course, the start of the season, going all the way back there and thinking about that. I mean, the aim probably within the camp with ownership would have been finishing in the top half. And of course, the way things went, the way it was going in October, I would be on the floor laughing if anyone ever told me that we would be where we are right now, come what, recording on January 22nd, 2023, we would be what, 5 points off of fifth. It's almost odd, Seb, to think that realistically that top half objective is more than achievable within less than 10 games for Unai Emery in the Premier League as Villa boss. The fact that, of course, and I've said this numerous times, and of course the other guys have as well, just the small changes, whether it be the tactical side, the mental side, just a little bit more game management, a little different nuances kind of around it. We've seen Villa win 1-0 before, and it has been pretty. But, and let me know what you think about this here in a second before I go on this tangent too long. It probably starts not making too much sense. But in a weird way, Villa are winning ugly in some circumstances, but it looks much more comfortable than it ever did before. I can think the amount of clean sheets we kept under Dean Smith in the behind closed door season. And of course, there were some comfortable wins there, but a lot of them, some of them you'd have to say too, were just kind of scraping by. I think of the 1-0 against Wolves, of course, with the penalty in the dying minutes. I mean, you could probably go through that season and pick out a bunch, and a lot of them never really felt comfortable, but there's almost that, I don't know, pleasing and satisfying nature to the way that Unai Emery has these guys playing, that you just know that they can actually hold out for once. Do you get that as well?
I mean, I completely agree. And I look at the reasons. First of all, you mentioned lockdown. And, you know, one of the games that was really similar to Southampton was actually Southampton away under Dean Smith in lockdown. We won 1-0 thanks to a Ross Barkley goal. And I remember that being really uncomfortable as well, you know, defending for our lives. I think Danny Ings even scored in the last few minutes. But it got ruled out by VAR for offside. So there's loads of similarities, but you can also notice an improvement within those similarities. And it sounds stupid to say, but there's so many little minute details that Unai Emery has come in and adjusted that have made the world of difference. For example, playing Douglas Luiz in his natural role has completely transformed our midfield. And I mean completely. The midfield of Douglas Luiz and Kamara, I could talk all day about my love for Kamara, about how he is everything this club has been waiting for and how he genuinely is one of the best sixes in the league, in my opinion. Again, minute details, the back four going to a back five when we need to protect a lead, you know, bringing Leon Bailey off and bringing Matty Cash on was a really, really smart substitution yesterday because we were under the cosh and they'd just brought El Yunusi on, if I'm not mistaken. So they were getting a lot of joy down their left and right-hand side. So bringing another fullback on, you know, was genius. I think Jacob Ramsey was playing left back at times with Alex Moreno, almost tucking into a back three of Moreno, Mings and Konsa. So, yeah, you notice how well prepared we are for these situations. And that's genuinely something we couldn't say that long ago under Gerrard. If we went 1-0 up, it would almost feel like we weren't prepared and we'd, you know, have to come up with something on the spot to be able to see a lead out. So, I mean, look, you mentioned the table and I'm really, really trying not to get ahead of myself. I almost don't like looking at the table in fear that it will change and my eyes are just deceiving me. There's still a lot of football to be played. So a lot of people will call me negative. A lot of people think I'm the more negative one on this podcast, but I just don't want to get ahead of myself because with Aston Villa, it normally ends in pain. I mean, it's pretty viewing. And, you know, I'm not complaining at all, but a lot of football still to be played. I was looking at a stat when Gerrard came in and people were saying, oh, Gerrard has a 50% win percentage now. Like, we're on the up. Things have changed. And people forget that Gerrard did actually have a really good reign in his first few games as boss before it, for some reason, went downhill. You know, he had that new manager bounce. And there is a talk of a new manager bounce under Unai Emery, but I can't see it ending anytime soon. And that's the famous last words, and touch wood as I am here at the moment. But he has that tactical nous about him to be able to prepare for each game individually and know exactly what to expect. It seems as though nothing will be able to take Villa by surprise, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, like a lot of people will mention a new manager bounce. I mean, at this point, I think we're past the managerial bounce point, and it's just reality that, I mean, you look at when he was at PSG and Arsenal and the stature of those clubs and where they want to be, and then you look at how well he does with Villarreal and getting them to win trophies that they probably can only never imagine and compete in the Champions League and et cetera, et cetera. Villa are his kind of club. He can literally take over every facet that he wants to. Of course, there's been talk with another kind of sporting director or something kind of coming in alongside the current management team that we currently have to kind of help out there. Of course, every transfer is not going to be kind of processed until it's approved by the manager as well. There's all these different things, and I think that's really important when you're looking at, I mean, hell, we still have a Steve Bruce player with John McGinn. We have Dean Smith players here, of course, with a lot of them, you'd have to say, under the promotion season now being basically told that they can go. Of course, we have Steven Gerrard players, and now we have Unai Emery players. I think there was a massive concern, and I never thought it was going to turn into an Everton situation where you have 5, 6, 7, 8 managers and you have all these players from all those different reigns. But it was starting to get messy. And the fact that you look at the bench and there's 2 goalkeepers and there is 2 youth players on the bench, I mean, that is concerning. But the one thing I will say, and we'll get more onto the game here in a moment, it's almost refreshing to me that, of course, this people's lives and having to leave the club may mean that they have to move countries and change all that kind of stuff, which can affect them personally. But the fact that we basically, as a football club, come out and said to Nakamba, you can look somewhere else. Of course, Sansan seems to be the same, even though it seems like Emery wants him to stay, but knows he needs more game time to succeed kind of thing. Of course, Freddie Gilbert has already left as well. And I mean, the list kind of goes on and on and on. I'm almost shocked to see the moves and kind of the honesty that's already come out in terms of planning to get some of these players out in January. Because to be honest, I thought maybe we would ship one this month, and it seems like maybe we could even ship 3 to 4. Of course, that then means we need to strengthen as well, because we cannot go into the rest of the season with that bench, because realistically, Ollie Watkins gets hurt, we're all going to cry and complain and bitch and moan and wonder what the hell is going to go on. But kind of spinning it back to the game, Seb, to go off of that tangent, let's go into the goal that wasn't a goal for Southampton, of course. James Ward-Prowse's goal gets eliminated due to VAR, with Jacob Ramsey getting a little boot to the Achilles and a shove to the back. I can see it both ways. It does look a little soft. If I was a Southampton fan, I'd feel very hard done by. But realistically, if that happens anywhere else on the pitch, they're going to call that a foul. So really, is there anything truly to complain about?
I mean, I completely agree, and I'm trying to take my claret and blue tinted glasses off here, but I mean, it's a foul in the laws of the game. It's a foul. If he doesn't rake his studs down the back of his ankle, then Jacob Ramsey clears that ball, and we're away from danger. I think it can be misinterpreted on the first few looks, because I certainly looked at it at first and just thought it was a shove, which would have been soft. But then you see the ankles and you see him essentially trip him up, which I think a lot of people are missing. Again, if you're a Southampton fan, you're feeling aggrieved because you're down at the bottom, you're fighting for every point, and these can be the deciding moments that go for or against you that can, you know, turn the tide in your season. If they go 1-0 up, that's massive for them, and they possibly hold out for the victory. But yeah, if you're asking me my opinion on it, in the laws of the game, it's a foul, so I don't think there can be much complaints.
Well, that too, Seb, you have to look at it from, I mean, I guess the laws of the game and the way people think that some fouls neutralize other. I mean, there are some pretty nasty fouls there yesterday from the Southampton point of view that could have probably done a little bit more. Of course, there was their goalkeeper coming out, I think, on Ramsey that, I mean, a few people have kind of questioned that, are still arguing that, but realistically, the one angle that I saw, the goalkeeper did get it, that I saw, at least. That's my opinion. It's hard in those situations, but there was others too. So, I mean, all in all, I guess you would have to say in the law and the odd atmosphere and universe is what I'm trying to figure out the word that I was saying with other words that didn't make any sense of football. Really, I guess everything balances out, doesn't it?
I mean, look, I'm no footballing expert. The first Ramsey incident with Bazunu, I think, yeah, my first glance at it was that Bazunu got enough of the ball to justify a penalty not being given. I think if it's given originally, I don't think it gets overturned. You know, then we go into that hasty bracket of clear and obvious. Was it clear and obvious error from the referee? And I don't think it was. I don't think there was enough in it to justify it being overturned. I'm trying not to use too many cliches here, but you've seen them given. And if it was Martinez and the referee had given a penalty, although I'd feel aggrieved, I'd be sitting here saying, well, he's given the ref a decision to make. And when you give a ref a decision to make in your own penalty area, then you can't really feel hard done by if he goes with a certain decision. So yeah, that one could have swung either way, but I think the referee did get it right on this occasion. I know you haven't asked me about it, but I'm just going to touch on the second Ramsey incident. And I think that is a penalty. I've looked at it so many times and it's really weird to me because it seems as though he just swipes his ankles away. And then the Southampton defender, whose name escapes me, then goes and points at the ball, which has run past him as if he's got a touch on it. So I think that one was a penalty, and I think we were hard done by there. And I think that was enough to overturn it from VAR. I think that was a clear and obvious error, but luckily it hasn't come back to bite us, which is always nice.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that's a thing too. I feel like in seasons past, things would have just not worked out and things are clicking now on multiple levels. And I mean, long may it continue. The fact that we are exactly 500 level football club in terms of 8 wins, 4 draws, 8 losses. It's nice to see that turn the goal differential positive. I'll be a very, very happy boy. I did see one tweet here just to kind of throw it in the works here from, I think it was at Aston Zilla FC. This is in regards to, of course, Unai Emery. A waveform has been corrected, like I've referenced at the very start of this podcast. Man United at home, of course, he's done that. And this dreaded third kit curse is now over. Unai Emery looks at that and he laughs in its face. The next, I'm hoping, being a trophy. But, I mean, Seb, when you look at things like not succeeding under a certain kit, especially the third kit, I feel like it just honestly has been a curse from us for as long as I can really remember. I always think back to, Did we wear a third kit on the final day against West Ham? It was the green one, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, that really does say it all. yeah, we don't need to get into that day again because I don't feel like having another mini heart attack. But do you think there was a true curse there? Or does it at least feel... Is there something within Villa fandom that just makes us think we can't have certain things? And now we have Unai Emery who just makes the world think, you know what, anything's possible with this Villa side.
I mean, it's a good question. And it's certainly something that was frustrating a lot of people, the fact that we couldn't seem to get any luck with any of our third kits. I think the last time we won in a third kit was Luke Roper, if I'm not mistaken. But look, I mean, yeah, I find it really funny, but he's still got that FA Cup third round curse to get ahead of first. You know, the mighty Stevenage have caught him out on that one. So we'll have to wait till next season to see if that curse can be broken. But look, he keeps defying odds. He keeps defying expectations. Long may it continue.
Do we know the last time that Ollie Watkins scored a header? Because to be honest, like...
Liverpool at home.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. It was either them or Arsenal behind closed doors. And I couldn't quite remember which would have came after the other.
Surely he scored after closed doors. Closed doors was 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, so in the 7-2, he scored cutting in from the right, and then he scored...
A header and then a left-footed shot. I think
okay, that's what it was. But was that before or after the Arsenal game where he beat them? Was it like 2 or 3 nil away? I'm pretty sure he scored a header in that one because he cut in.
No, he scored a header. Liverpool just gone in the 2-1 defeat.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking behind closed doors. You are correct.
You really confused me because I was thinking, surely he hasn't gone 2 seasons without scoring. See, surely there's more than that. Hold on. I'm fully prepared to stop recording this to go and have a look because I think he scores quite a lot of headers, doesn't he?
Well, you go have a look. I'll keep talking so we don't have to stop anything. but no, in regards
go off on one of your tangents.
I'll go off on one of them. I wish Tom was here because he would make it even longer. No, like it's a weird thing. I mean, you think of strikers and you think of most of them being able to head it home comfortably. It just feels like it's been a long time with Ollie Watkins, but I could be wrong. But regardless of that, let's go over to the 3-word reviews over on Twitter. There's been a lot of love for that. of course, after another big win for the Villa. I think there's over 100 so far, if I'm checking correctly, and if I can get this to actually refresh in time, which it's not going to, I don't think. Oh, there we go. 104, to be exact, as of time of recording. So thank you to everyone. You can tweet us at 7500Holt to have your say on the game. Just a heads up to the people that give me like a paragraph, I don't read those out. They're 3-word reviews. Just abide by the rules, and I'll try to get to yours. Of course, these go out anywhere between 5 to 15 minutes post-match for the tweet. So it's just kind of nice to have your say. It's great to see some of the interaction that you guys show each other and have some fun with it as well. And some of the debate, honestly, is hilarious too. So keep it coming. Let's go to, I'm going to butcher this last name, but apologies to Tristan. Tristan Fonander, hopefully that's correct, saying we are coming. Let's go to Guy Poxon saying dominated 90% deserved. JJ saying away day result. Jazz Singh saying moving on up. A VillaFan.com podcast saying finding a way. Minnesota Lions saying thank you, VAR. Let's scroll down here to Justin saying 3 points away. Simon Palmer, carry on Unai. Let's go to Dave Sterling, great for Ollie. And let's do three more. Why not? I think it's Daler or Dollar. Sorry if I butchered that. At Roger 98174125. you can tell that was probably a computer generating that one. Saying is, I love Emery. And like I said, we'll do two more. Let's see here. Let's scroll down to the very bottom because I don't want to miss people in a certain section. Trail Blazing Villain, get Emery strikers. And let's finish with Nick Davis. This is the ultimate way to have a little bit of positivity. He says European tour incoming. I think that's the best way to say that. Seb, I didn't tell you this pre-recording, but I want your 3-word review, please.
Oh, I hate you so much. honestly, and Simon and Tom will back me up on this. There is nothing worse than giving a 3-word review, especially when it's on the spot.
You shouldn't expect this by now. I mean, this
I know I should, because it happens every week and I always forget about it, mainly because I hate it so much. So I'm trying to put it to the back of my head and pretend as though it doesn't happen. Although if you do insist on putting me on the spot, my 3-word review is tricky win deserved. I completely counteracted myself, and that doesn't make any sense, but yeah, I've explained why it was a tricky opponent, but in the end we deserved to win it. So anyway, going back to my header, so I found the statistics. So the two previous header goals behind closed doors, as mentioned, so it's Liverpool first and then Arsenal, and those were his last headed goals in lockdown. So then with fans back, so in a year and a half or a season and a half, he's only scored 4 headers. Newcastle at home in the first game back with fans, where we won 2-0. That was a header. Then Burnley away in the 3-1 win, that was a header. And then Liverpool recently, and then Southampton just gone. So 4 in a season and a half. So not as many as I thought, actually.
Well, there's been 4 of them. And I think I saw some stat too where he's had something like, I might have this reversed because I don't have it in front of me. It's either 3 goals and 2 assists or 2 goals and 3 assists under Unai Emery or something like that so far. So if you're looking at his contributions, it's definitely been more than valuable, which is important to say because, of course, losing Danny Ings, someone who, of course, did score goals, but to be fair, he scored basically in patches here and there, so maybe it didn't look as effective. It's important to note that because our striking department is a little shallow at the moment. If I was going to give
here it you go, let's do him justice. Sorry, I want to do Ollie Watkins justice here. Assist for Man United in Emery's first game, goal versus Liverpool, assist versus Tottenham, and a goal versus Southampton. So 4 goals in his last 6 Premier League appearances.
Oh, 4.
Okay. AVFC Stato, eat your heart out.
Well, he is an absolute hero, and I thank him very much for every vital stat I need, because I go to his page and panic if I need something to say for this podcast. So
do I.
Yeah, so I think we need to give him some credit, at least in every podcast, and I feel like that's happened as of late.
Start paying him a wage.
Oh, there's not enough. Trust me, Seb. if I was going to say a three-word review, I would say stay classy, Unai. That's all I could say.
How long have you had that in your notes for?
I as soon as I asked you, I knew it was coming back to me. So I started thinking of it. So I at least had, what, probably 3 or 4 minutes since that's probably been a thing. If so, so I get away with it. I'm the one that edits it. So I have the power here, and that's all that matters. But Seb, if you're going to give your man of the match / match ball to anyone in particular in relation to Villa, who would it be?
It's really tempting to give it to Ollie Watkins. Obviously, scoring the winning goal always helps, but his hold-up play was really, really good. You know, most of our attacks went through him. He didn't have that many chances, but when it came to him, he took it, and that's probably a criticism that's come his way that he hasn't done that enough. It'd be quite easy to give it to Emi Martinez, two outstanding saves, but the problem is you expect that from Emi Martinez. He has that charisma, he has that ability, so you'd expect that. Yeah, I'm going to go give it to Ollie Watkins, match winner.
Okay. I'm going to give it to Emi Martinez, purely because, I mean, you reference the saves, but the fact that he literally had the balls to run almost halfway up the pitch, I think, what, a couple times, and take the ball from an incoming defender that could have led to a break on numerous occasions, and just pass it to an incoming teammate with so much confidence is just something I live for every day. I didn't think he was actually that fast, to be honest, considering how tall he is. So it's great to see we have a goalkeeper with some good distribution and confidence to come out of his goal as well. That only makes, of course, Unai Emery's system even stronger when you're playing out from the back and things like that too. So let's be honest, he'll screw up eventually. It happens to every goalie. It happens to the best of them. So let's not be too hard when it happens and remember moments like this one. But of course, like I mentioned at the start of the podcast, Seb, now we don't play till February 4th against Leicester. We don't really have a crazy amount to talk about, of course, maybe one thing being transfers. Do you expect much to happen in the next, what, is there 9 days left or whatever it is at time of recording on the 22nd of January? Do you think much will happen?
I think Fabrizio Romano said he expects 2 to 3 more. Now, you can't take anything as gospel when it comes to Aston Villa transfers until you see them holding up the shirt. Those Guendouzi links won't go away. The same with Moussa Dembele. I think if we really wanted Dembele, then that would happen quite quickly just because of the low fee reported, you know, a chance to play in the Premier League again. I can't see that one being too complicated unless wage demands were an issue. Guendouzi might be a little more complicated, just trying to persuade him to make the move because, you know, there's been a lot of reports that there hasn't been any contact or that he wouldn't particularly be too fond of a move. There's obviously that relationship with Unai Emery, and I personally would really like him. Weston McKennie's another one. I don't actually think there's too much in that, plainly because that link's been around for years. And then Unai Emery did mention a centre-back, but again, I can't see it. If we get a striker and a midfielder in, if we were to go and get Dembele and Guendouzi, I would be delighted, and I think that would leave us in a relatively comfortable position for the rest of the season to achieve what we want to achieve. Any more would be a bonus, although I do think we need at least two because that bench didn't look great against Southampton. You never like having two keepers on the bench.
100%. I think the thing too is it all depends what happens with really our loan signings. Of course, Augustinsson, I would assume, goes back to Sevilla at some point. I don't know what's going to happen with Bednarek, to be honest. I've heard things that Southampton might recall him, which would make sense. They're in a bit of a bother and they probably need as much depth as they can have right now as an option. And really, he's not playing for us. So if that's
a weird one for me, that's a really weird one because I would have thought that recall would have come quite soon in January if they wanted him back because they've known the position that they're in for, you know, it's not a surprise that they're down the bottom of the table and they're leaking goals for fun. So having that aerial ability, if I was Nathan Jones, then he'd have been one of the ones straight back in.
Well, I think that's the thing too, though. They might be looking at defenders from a Southampton perspective. I don't know anything really Southampton wise what might be happening, but I almost wonder if they're looking to bring in a center back on another loan or purchasing them outright And they're waiting to see if that happens, if not bring Bednarak back, which, I mean, the first thing that'll happen, if we do sign a center back this window, that automatically tells me either Bednarak's going back or Chambers is being sold. That's one of the two, who will be axed for the second time under Unai Emery very soon. I'm almost sure of it. Aside from that, yeah, I would have to say you're still looking at probably either a striker or a winger that can play a little bit more further forward in the middle, or an outright striker itself. The Dembele one's kind of interesting, and I was listening to the Claret and Blue podcast earlier today, and John Townley actually made a really good point, and this is how ridiculous the market is. What the fee for Dembele is roughly, they say, around $3 million, because, of course, Lyon want to make a bit of cash, or they're going to lose him for nothing, which makes sense. If you're really not having that great of a season or whatever, I don't really know the whole circumstance in Ligue 1 right now, but of course I know those clubs don't have infinite cash or even nearly as much as the Premier League does. But in regards to that, you could literally sign him in January for $3 million. And then if things work out and go a little well, you could probably sell him again in the summer for like 10. And that's exactly what John said to reference him. And I think that's 100% correct. It's almost a weird one where you could sign a player and say, you know what, come in for 6 months, prove it. If not, we'll ship you on, get you to where you maybe really want to go. And we'll also make a little bit of a cash flow as well. Like, I mean, there's so many, that's very Chelsea. If that was to ever be something to happen, but I doubt
it's very Barcelona. For 6 months.
Well, I think very Barcelona these days would be to sign someone that's well past it for like 90 million and hope that it works out.
Well, I mean, Dwight York's available. He's just left his managerial position, so we could always get him back on a player.
For a second, I thought you were going to say Dwight Gale. I don't know why.
That man still haunts me.
That man still haunts, I think, every Villa fan. But regardless of that, there's going to be some movement, and we'll be here to report on it, either on here, of course, or on Twitter. Like I said, follow us at 7500 Holt. But I think we're going to wrap things up there. And as I say that, before we do wrap things up, I just want to mention that for kind of planning ahead to let everyone know, we're hoping to do something for the end of the window, a little bit of a recap. I haven't decided if we're going to do a podcast for that, or we'll do it on Twitter Spaces. Of course, what Seb mentioned earlier on the podcast, we did one, I think it was the day before Danny Ings got officially announced that he was going to West Ham. Had a very great reaction, had a few guests kind of join in, or listeners, I should say, come in and speak with us. Neil for the Love of Paul McGraw podcast jumped in as well as one of the co-hosts. And it was, like I said, just a great conversation. So we want to kind of get back to doing that a little bit more. So be sure to follow us on Twitter for all that information. I think that's important to reference. If we do it that way, we'll probably try to upload that recording onto here as a bonus, maybe a day or two after, if I can get the file quick enough. Hopefully we'll have a Leicester preview out before that game as well. But I just wanted to stress that too. And of course, and I don't do this enough, follow us on Spotify, of course, Acast, Apple Podcasts, wherever your podcast, leave a review. I'm hoping if we can get some more people following us on Spotify and rating us on Spotify, maybe we'll do a little bit of a giveaway as well. I'll try to figure something out like that and announce it earlier on in the podcast for people that click on it right away and can hear that right away, because I know not everyone listens to the very end. But regardless of that,
Sam, if you're still here, I commend you.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know what? We're great chatters, and that's all that matters. But Seb, thank you very much for joining me. You can find him on Twitter at SebastianBacon8. Follow me on Twitter at TalkAstonVille. Like I said, tweet the team at 7500 to Holt. Email the podcast, holtcast@gmail.com. Go click on the website, www.7500holt.com. These are a lot of things that I don't know how I remember, but regardless of that, we should be back within the next week or so with some more Villa goodness. But anyways, like I said, we'll leave it there. And don't forget, up the Villa. We're going up. We're going up.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.